You're listening to The Bridge Metro West, located at 7 Strathmore Road in Natick, Massachusetts. For more information about The Bridge Metro West, our weekly Sunday gatherings, and other events, go to www.bridgemetrowest.com.
We're in a series called Pursuit, Prescription for the Weary Soul. And today we're talking about the prescription of listening. Some of us are better at it than others. But let's read 1 Kings 19. I'm just going to read verses 11 through 13. It's a great story. Read the whole story. It'll really help you out a lot. But verse 11, it says, "And he said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by. And a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'" I've really felt that this summer we are refocusing on the simple things. That not only the simplicity of the gospel, but the simplicity of our relationship with the Lord. And so this whole summer, we're just calling it a summer of pursuit. We are pursuing. We are pursuing the face of God. Pursuing his heart, pursuing his ways, contending for the kingdom to manifest more fully, not just here in Metro West, but across the land. This is our sphere of influence to a large degree. And so this is our responsibility. You know, years ago, I did a kind of a market study in this region, and I found that there was about 110,000 people within a five-mile radius of this house. The mission is here, and I love missions. I love all the missionaries that we support in the nations, in Africa, and Asia, and beyond. And we've got a missionary in Mexico. Look, I love missions, but our mission is also right here. It's our friends. It's our neighbors. It's the one by one, a little leaven, leavening the whole bread. Sometimes we're waiting for this idea of this kind of nuclear bomb of revival to drop into a room or into a place where God's just going to come in sovereignly and do everything for us. But the reality is that the most effective advancement of the gospel comes one by one and two by two, three by three, until addition turns into multiplication. But one of the greatest challenges of our generation, it's really not a lack of information. I was having a conversation with someone in Texas recently about this, and how we still tend to cling to the tree of knowledge. But the cross leads us back to the tree of life, where we live from the life of Christ. We live from relationship, and living from that place, we now acquire knowledge as he releases revelation through his word, through his voice, through our relationship with him. But the problem is, see, the enemy knows this, so we have information coming at us from every direction, all the time. I mean, even now, I've got my iPad up here. I got my phone up here telling me how much time I have left today. I got my Bible. Everything's on D&D, but if it wasn't on D&D, I'd be getting text messages, and, you know, I used to get about 1,500 a day. Now it's down to probably about 300 to 500 a day, and not just locally, but from nations. And if I don't put my phone on D&D at night, my phone just lights up all night. There's information all the time. How many times my wife says to me, "Put your phone away." She's not wrong, but it doesn't mean that I always do it. We have information coming at us from every direction. That's not the problem. It's the lack of stillness, the lack of quietness in our lives. We live in a world filled with noise and notifications and social media, news cycles, deadlines, opinions, and voices demanding our attention from every direction. And if we're not careful, we will become so consumed by noise that we lose our ability to hear God. You know, years ago, there were the researchers, and they were studying the effects of conditions on pilots. We have a pilot here. And they discovered that when pilots are flying through heavy weather or heavy cloud cover, it's possible for their senses to become disoriented. And they can actually feel like they are climbing when they're actually descending. They can feel like they are level when they're actually turning. And the danger is that if they trust their feelings instead of their instruments, they can crash. And that's why pilots are trained to trust the voice of the instruments over their feelings in the moment. I'm not saying ignore feelings at all times, but there are certain times where you've got to table your feelings and lock into the things that you know, that you know, that you know are truth. Because your feelings at times will lie to you. Your feelings at times will deceive you. The Lord will even allow the voice of the enemy to begin to whisper into your life because he wants to strengthen your discernment. And the only way that you can strengthen your discernment is through tension and opposition. That's how we build character and perseverance. But many believers are spiritually exhausted because they've been listening to their feelings more than God's voice. I have pockets of time of that. There's just certain moments in time where you get caught up in the feels. You get caught up in yourself. You get caught up in your moments and your difficulties and your awareness of the breath and your awareness of the reality of the King and his kingdom begin to fade. And in the midst of that, fear says one thing, failure says another thing, and culture still speaks another thing, the enemy's still whispering another thing, but weary souls are restored when they learn to hear what God is saying. I love this story of Elijah, especially what led him up to this moment. Elijah just experienced one of the greatest victories of his entire life that he would ever see in his ministry on Mount Carmel. Fire fell from heaven. If you remember the story, you know, he's challenging the prophets of Baal and he says, you build your altar, I'll build my altar. And he doesn't stop at just building the altar. He builds the altar and then he digs a moat around the altar and then he pours water on the altar to the point that it fills the moat. And so his whole entire altar is saturated with water. And he says, you call upon your God and I'll call upon my God. And the one who sends fire is true. I mean, that's kind of bold. I'm a bold guy, but I've never like risen to that level of boldness. And, you know, I've been in place, like I've faced off with witch doctors and things. Like I haven't quite gone to that level. I just smile. It's like, I sometimes feel like that's the greatest spiritual warfare you have. Like somebody standing in front of you and looking stern, you just smile. You can diffuse so many situations with a smile. But, you know, Elijah's not like that. He's like, you know, he's got a little swagger in his step. You know, if he did that today, and even if it was successful, like social media would go after him. He's like, oh, what is that heretic? You know, he's just so self-aggrandizing. He's putting on a show. No, he trusted in his God. So the prophets of Baal, they're running around. They're slicing their skin. They're doing all their incantations, and nothing is happening. With one prayer, Elijah calls upon the one whose name is Yahweh, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh Elohim. And fire falls and consumes the altar with all of the water and everything that would inhibit the ability for fire to burn was consumed. Because God is the fuel for the fire. You could say, in a sense, in that context, revival broke out. Everybody got to see that God was God. But immediately afterward, Elijah crashes emotionally, spiritually, mentally. Now I can identify with that too. And one threat from Jezebel sends him running into the wilderness. It's not much different than the story we read last week. And we were reading Psalm 63. We opened the service with it today. Oh God, you are my God. King David running for his life because his son Absalom was attempting to usurp the throne and his authority. So what does David do? He runs to the wilderness. What does Elijah do? He runs to the wilderness. The prophet who called down fire now wants to die. Prophets can be like that. They're a little moody. The man who stood boldly before a nation is now hiding in a cave. And it's here that God teaches Elijah and us the prescription of listening. So let's learn a few things. Number one, you have to understand that weariness distorts what you hear. You don't hear the same way. You don't experience words the same way when you're tired, because often when you're tired, you become a little cranky. And when you're tired and cranky, someone in your house might say something that yesterday would have been completely fine, but now because you're tired and cranky, you hear it a different way. Why? Because weariness distorts what we hear. 1 Kings 19:4 says this, "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree, and he asked that he might die, saying, 'It is enough. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my father's.'" I say that in a little bit of jest, but the reality is I would probably feel the same way. I mean, Jezebel was no spring chicken. She knew what she was doing. And she had sidled up to power, and she had gained influence at the highest levels of authority in the land, and she wanted Elijah dead. Yet, from a kingdom perspective, Elijah's circumstances hadn't really changed as much as his own perspective. I mean, remember, just a few moments prior, he challenged all of the prophets of Baal, one prophet of God, and hundreds of prophets of Baal. And with one prayer, fire fell. God endorsed the prophet. God endorsed his own name. And God endorsed himself as the father of Israel. Yet still with one threat, Elijah ran. Just days earlier, he was calling down fire. Now he's laying there calling for his own death. See, weariness has a way of distorting reality. Exhaustion magnifies problems. Fatigue amplifies fear. And burnout convinces us that things are worse than they really are. And notice Elijah begins listening to his emotions instead of God's promises. That's what weariness does. It brings you into the cloud of unsanctified emotion if you allow it. And you may think that you're ascending, but you might be descending. You might think that you're holding steady, but over time you're veering off course because you're listening to a different voice instead of his. And that's what weariness does. It changes the volume of the wrong voices if we allow it. When we're tired, fear sounds louder. Doubt sounds louder. Discouragement sounds louder. The enemy knows if he cannot destroy your calling, he will try to distort your hearing. This is why Proverbs 4:23 says this, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life." So what's the kingdom key? What you listen to most will eventually shape what you believe. So that begs the question, what are you listening to? What do you listen to the most? What do you step into the deepest? What voice has the highest influence in your life today? But there's some good news in this. Before God speaks correction, he often provides care. That leads us to number two. God often ministers before he speaks. So 1 Kings 19, 5 through 8. Let's read that. And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." Verse 6, and he looked and behold, there was at his head a cake baked. I just lost my page. Oh, it's on the screen. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, on a hot stone. I'm back. And a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you." And he rose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. I don't know what kind of food that was. But that guy was biohacking. There was probably like peptides in it and protein and I don't know, probably like an energy drink mixed in the cake. 40 days and 40 nights from one meal. It didn't say he fasted. It said that food sustained him until he came to the Mount of God. Before God gives Elijah a new assignment, he gives him rest. Before God gives him instruction, he gives him nourishment. Before God addresses his ministry, he addresses his humanity, he addresses his fear, he addresses, "What are you doing in this cave?" He displays the compassion of his heart. See, a lot of times we expect God to immediately rebuke us, and it's probably because a lot of times this is what people do. But instead, he refreshes us. God understands us in our humanity more than we do. And he knows this. Exhausted people struggle to hear clearly. And the God who made Elijah knew Elijah wasn't simply having a spiritual problem. He was physically depleted, emotionally drained, mentally exhausted. And God ministers to the whole man. Many people are trying to hear God's voice while neglecting God's process, but God restores Elijah before he redirects him. See, I can relate to this to a certain extent because, you know, over the years and ministry and in life, there's been these mountaintop experiences, these great victories in the Lord, these incredible, you know, revival meetings or, you know, whatever it is that we're doing. And it's, when you come out of that, sometimes you don't even realize how depleted you are, how tired you are, how fatigued you are until the anointing that was there for the moment, for the purpose of the moment, begins to lift. And you realize your energy has left you. How you posture yourself in that moment, that will determine the trajectory that you are on for the coming days. Psalm 23, you guys know this, verse 2 and 3, it says, "He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul." What's the kingdom key here? God's refreshing is often the preparation for his revelation. And oftentimes his revelation is preparation for hardship that is to come. There have been times in my life where, you know, I would just get a bunch of prophetic words in a very short period of time. You know, I'll be at a conference, someone gives me a prophetic word. I'm here, someone gives me a prophetic word. One time I was in Dallas, a homeless guy came up and gave me a prophetic word, complete with scripture. The homeless, I was just talking to somebody in the Dallas area, and we were talking about how the homeless people know the Bible better than a lot of Christians do. It's incredible. And all the guy wanted was some fried okra. So we got him some fried okra after that because it was a good word. But I know when I'm in, we just call it like this little prophetic bubble, when God is trying to speak to me from different directions, and oftentimes because I'm not quite listening here in a way that maybe I ought to be. But I also know that when that happens, I'm about to step into a little season of fire. Not because he's punishing, but because he's refining you for the purpose for what is about to come next. So once Elijah has been refreshed, God begins teaching him something deeper, not just how to recover, but how to listen. That brings us to number three. God speaks most clearly to hearts that draw near. 1 Kings 19, just 12 and 13, right here. Verse 12, and after the earthquake of fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? See, notice that God had already been present. God was present in the wilderness. Before that, God was present at the altar, and God was present in the cave. God was present during Elijah's despair, but Elijah's breakthrough came when he learned to position himself to hear. See, the whisper, it's not about volume, it's about intimacy. You can only hear a whisper if you draw near to the source. God wasn't struggling to get Elijah's attention. God was inviting Elijah into a deeper level of relationship. Why? Because we tend to systematize things. If God does something one way in this moment, we decide that must be the way that God does it. And so we build a whole ministry around that. Like today, you know, we would start a ministry school about how to call fire down upon a water-soaked altar. You know, and we could make, you know, workbooks and, you know, multimedia, have some videos. We could have a conference. We could have a ministry school. It'd be like a fire ministry school of burning altars or whatever you want to call it. We would do the same thing with how Jesus healed. Like Jesus, you know, one time he spit on a guy's eye, like, and he got his sight back. Like, oh, that must be the way that God works. No, this is how God works. When Jesus said, I can do nothing of myself. I can only do what I see the Father doing. But we always want to go back to the tree of knowledge. And so when we gain the knowledge of something, we want to build a system around that. And I'm not anti-structure. I'm not anti-systems. But once we have the structure and the system, we have to be like the priests who after the temple was built, that they called upon the name of God and the glory fell to them, and they could not stand any longer because of the glory of God. We have to function out of relationship, not out of what God did yesterday. This was the test for Elijah. Because throughout scripture, God speaks in many ways, sometimes through fire. I like that. You guys know I like things that blow up. I like the big things. I like all that stuff. Sometimes through visions. He sometimes speaks through dreams and sometimes through prophetic words. But one thing remains consistent. God always speaks through the Holy Scriptures. And he speaks most clearly to people who stay close to him. The issue is rarely whether God is speaking. The issue is whether we are positioned to hear. You have that song that we sing. I just love this line. Let us become more aware of his presence. Because so often the presence isn't the problem. It's our awareness. When everything is closing in around us and we're just allowing ourselves to take in information at all times, and we become so desensitized to the whisper. We become so desensitized that even if the wind blew in this room right now, we'd try to figure out some kind of scientific explanation. But God speaks most clearly to people who stay close to him. See, Elijah heard the noise of fear after he heard the sound of fire falling. And he listened to Jezebel's threats. He listened to his exhaustion. He listened to his discouragement. But now God was teaching him to listen differently. Because weary people often become consumed with what everyone else is saying. But restoration begins when God's voice becomes the loudest voice in your life. James 4 verse 8 says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. The promise is not merely that God will speak. The promise is that God responds to pursuit. Many times I ask, what are you hungry for? What are you really hungry for? What are you hungry for this summer? I mean, I'm hungry for hot summer nights, early mornings on my patio with my squirrels and my coffee. I'm becoming that crazy old guy in the neighborhood. But I'm hungry for his presence. In the midst of struggle, in the midst of trial, in the midst of difficulty, I'm hungry for his presence. But then again, I have to ask myself, am I? Because what am I doing with my time? What am I doing with my life? What am I doing with the moments that no one else sees? What am I pursuing in that moment? I have a lot of times where I listen to my own head and I get discouraged, I get frustrated, I want to quit. I daydream about doing other things. When I was 4, my great ambition in life was to be the guy that gets to ride on the back of the trash truck. I thought that was so cool. I thought that was the coolest job. Like they just hanging out. They're hanging on the back of the trash truck going through neighborhoods. They hop down. They grab the trash. They throw it in. Then they get back on the truck and the truck drives. I was like, that is the coolest job ever. That's what I want to be. Oh, I aimed high at the age of 4. It was between that, a fireman, and an evangelist. But I was so captivated by the guy in the back of the truck because my mom wouldn't even let me hang my head out the window. It's like, this guy's in full view of the air. Love it. Sometimes I wonder, what would my life be like if that was my job? All I got to do is just, when we don't do that now, they got the robotic arms. Like, they ruined everything, technology. It was the best job ever. And there was one particular time where I was just like, I was planning, I do this sometimes. I'm letting you into some secret places now. Don't use this against me in the future. But I was like, I'm planning my exit strategies. God, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to figure this out. And I'm doing what I'm telling y'all not to do when you're like that. And I'm doom scrolling, watching Instagram reels. And this the first reel that comes, well, that was my plan, was to doom scroll. I don't know if you ever plan to do that or you just fall into it. The very first reel, it's a black preacher on a stage. And he says, don't you dare give up. That guy was slapping me from one side of the room to the other side of the room, and I still don't know who he is. You're a son of the Most High. You've got a calling on your life. You've been given the gift of salvation. Don't you dare. Who are you to say that you're going to lay it down? That might crush some people, but for me, like, that's how God's got to deal with me. I've always been that way. I played soccer in high school, man, and they'd always start me, and I would just play like junk. They'd take me out. The coach will get in my face and yell at me, and then I'm ready to go. He never figured out you should just yell at me before the game and then let me go. But, you know, soccer players, I mean, if you're watching the World Cup, they don't respond to that kind of stuff. Like, they got a toe tapped, and they act like their lifeblood is draining from their body. I wasn't that kind of soccer player. I was like, you take me down, I have your number. I'm getting back up, I'm gonna find you. It didn't always mesh well with my teammates. But I know what it's like to listen to a voice that is lesser than his. And look, guys, It's not always the enemy. That preaches really well. Oh, the devil's just trying to get me down. No, the battle is right here. Because there is a voice in your own mind that will speak, and it isn't necessarily in alignment with his. But I promise you that God responds to pursuit. And as we draw near, our hearts become more sensitive. And sometimes when you're in that funk and you just surrender to depression, you surrender to your stuff or your circumstances, it's like, you know, when you haven't worked out for a while and you first start working out, it's bad. It doesn't feel good. And you're like, why am I doing this? See, our spirit's the same way. When we're in our funk and it's just, you know, our spirit is buried under the thick walls of our soul and our mind and our will and our emotions have taken charge, and we're not walking by wisdom, communion, and conscience anymore, but we're surrendered to our circumstances. But then we read the word and it says, you know, draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. And you say, I'm going to test you, God, on this. And so you start to draw near to God, but it's like there's this twisting in your gut because your soul and your flesh don't want to let go of the dominion that it has over your mind. But I promise you, if you stay that course and you pursue, just like we did Thursday morning, and we'll do it again this Thursday morning, we pursue him, he will respond. And your spirit will become more discerning. Your hearing will become more refined. And the closer we get to him, the easier it becomes to recognize his voice. John 10:27 says that my sheep hear my voice and I know them and they follow me. But notice the order. One, they hear. Two, they know. And then three, they follow. Sometimes we want to turn that around. We want to get people to follow first, and then we want to give them knowledge next, and then, you know, hopefully they'll have an encounter with God and they'll hear. No, my sheep hear my voice, and then they are known and they know, and then they follow. Relationship produces recognition. And recognition produces reliability. Hear, know, and follow. So what's the kingdom key? Well, the issue is rarely whether God is speaking. The issue is whether we are close enough and quiet enough to hear him. James 4:8, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. And that's the challenge. I would say in our culture, in Western culture right now, this is a primary challenge for believers. It's not that God has stopped speaking, it's that the noise of life has become louder than the voice of God. It's very tempting to feel like the way God moved yesterday is the way that he will move today. This is why God tested Elijah in the cave, which God did not call him to the cave. Elijah put himself there. How many times over the years I've asked somebody how they're doing? They're like, oh, I'm in the cave. And I used to just buy that. It's like, I want to go in the cave too. I've got a room called the man cave. You walk down the stairs, there's a little sign that says man cave. And honestly, when I'm feeling bad about myself, I spend more time in the cave. Even if it's bright and sunny out. Debbie will be like, why don't you go outside? It's like, I'm in the cave. See, the Lord didn't put me in the cave. I walked and descended into the cave. See, when weary people learn to draw near again, when they return to the secret place, when they make room for his presence, they discover that God has been speaking all along. Maybe he's not speaking in the fire that fell on the altar like he did yesterday. Maybe he's not in the earthquake and the wind and the grand noise and the moving of earth and all of the things that I like. But maybe today, he's just going to speak in a whisper because he wants to test, are you listening for the voice Or are you just looking for the stuff of God? Do you become satisfied in just the outer wisps of his glory, or do you press through and want to know his heart? See, the answer for Elijah was not a new mountain. It wasn't a new circumstance. It wasn't a new miracle. It wasn't a new ministry opportunity. The answer was a fresh encounter with the voice of God. And I know that that's what some of us need today. And I would say probably everybody in this room today needs a fresh encounter. Not another opinion, not another podcast, not another strategy, not another self-help book, but I do all of those things. What if the breakthrough you've been looking for is one word from God? It should probably be a sentence. He looks at you in your cave of self-pity party in the man cave. He says, Paul, what are you doing here? It's never a question I actually want to answer. But see, he knows one word from him can silence years of fear. One word from God can break confusion. One word from God can restore purpose. One word from God can pull you out of the cave and back into your calling. Even if that word comes in the form of a question, what are you doing in this emotional space of your life? Do you know I've called you out? Draw near to me, I'll draw near to you. Now listen to the voice. Does this make sense to anybody today?
Yes.
Some of you have been asking God for fire, but God has been sending a whisper. You've been asking God for a sign, and God has been sending a scripture. You've been asking God for something spectacular, and God has been trying to get your attention in the secret place, because God understands a few things. Fire might get your attention, but a whisper changes your life. The enemy has been fighting your hearing, and that's why you've been distracted. That's why you've been overwhelmed. That's why you felt spiritually foggy, because if the enemy can fill your life with enough noise, you'll miss the voice that carries your next assignment. But I came to announce today, I came to declare in this room today that God is still speaking. He's speaking to marriages. He's speaking to prodigals. He's speaking to leaders. He's speaking to weary saints. He's speaking to people who almost gave up. He's speaking to people who thought their story was over. And just like Elijah, God is calling you out of the cave, out of isolation, out of discouragement, out of the burnout, out of survival mode and into fresh intimacy with him. My wife's gonna remind me of this message later, I know, but the same God who spoke to Elijah in the whisper is speaking to his church today. And if you will quiet the noise, if you'll make room for his presence, if you'll lean in close enough to listen, you'll discover that God still has a word for you. God still has purpose for your life. God still has strength for your journey. God still has direction for your next season. God is still speaking. Do you believe that here this morning? The whisper is enough. Oh, just touch somebody here today. I know it's awkward, but tell them God is still speaking. Oh, come on, that sounded so white, like you don't even believe it. Do you believe that God is still speaking? I'm telling you to prophesy to somebody. I'm telling you to declare the truth of God to somebody. And now somebody says, well, God spoke in a whisper. I can too. You're not God. But when God speaks, you better believe the whisper is enough.
Thank you for listening to this message from the Bridge Metro West in Natick, Massachusetts. Paul David Guidry is the senior pastor at the Bridge. For more information about the Bridge Metro West family, our gatherings and events, visit www.bridgemetrowest.com or call us at 508-651-1000. 0277.